Keeneland Life's Work Project. Number 4. Rick Nichols. In hindsight, the trust and fidelity that have united Rick Nichols and his patron over the past 35 years were transparently available within the first 35 seconds they had anything to do with each other. Sheikh Hamdan was then making his first bold incursions into the international bloodstock market. Nichols was in charge of the broodmare division at Spendthrift. The Sheikh had come back for a second look at Mashteen, a young mare entered for the 1981 Keeneland November sale. She was a graded stakes winner by Majestic Prince, but it was precisely such ruthless culling that had made Spendthrift's broodmare band what it was.
If they'd have two bad foals, they were gone. And that was the case with Mashteen. That's why she was in the cell. And Sheikh Hamdan come to look at her. And the first time he came, I didn't say anything. But when he came back the second time, I went up to him. I said, "Sir, this mare's had two bad foals. It might be good if you looked elsewhere." And he just looked at me and said, "Well, thank you."
The Sheikh gave $1 million for the mare.
And that's when Nelson Bunker Hunt was trying to corner the silver market. And at the price of silver, she was worth her weight in silver that day.
When Nichols was hired to supervise Shadwell's new Kentucky division, soon afterwards, Mashteen delivered a filly by Blushing Groom.
She had a filly. He named her Nargis, and she was crooked. And when he came to see her, he looked there. He said, "I guess I should have heeded your advice."
But to leave the story there would not be Nichols' style. To leave the story there, in fact, would dilute the candour that has rendered him so indispensable to his employer ever since.
She went on and produced a filly that won him, I think, a grade two and two grade threes. So
you were both right.
Yeah, we were both right.
Nichols' recruitment had been handled by Shadwell's European managers, and it was only after he had come aboard that he was asked to Royal Ascot to be reintroduced to his new boss.
So I go over there and get all dressed up. And back then they had a little house by the walking range. I go in, sit down, talk to him for a while, and a little while later Sheikh Mokhtoum comes in, sits down, we talk for a little bit. And then all the other Arabs and English managers and trainers and everybody started flowing in, and I just kind of sat back and trying to take in this new world that I just got thrown into.
At the end of the afternoon, Sheikh Mokhtoum said to his brother, in their own language, "Your American is very quiet." And that autumn he asked his own manager to reserve a specific name for his best weanling.
A couple of years later, we was at Newmarket, and a chestnut colt goes up the track wearing Sheikh Mokhtoum's colors, and the boss is looking at him through his binoculars. He said, "You know what that horse's name is?" I said, "No." He says, "Quite American. He's named after you."
So Nichols is guaranteed a lasting imprint on the stud book through the sire of Real Quiet and grandsire of Midnight Loot. But that laconic demeanor of his, underpinned by a depth of experience that requires no superficial demonstration, is matched in the unobtrusive foundations he has laid for a litany of Shadwell champions either side of the Atlantic. There had been little obvious induction in Nichols' Texas upbringing. True, the kind of resources he did usefully inherit can be gleaned from the fact that his father, a construction manager, was self-taught in engineering and architecture. But there was a distant relative in Kansas who had buckskin horses on a cattle ranch. These so captivated Nichols that when he came home, he secretly bought one for $125. He was just 13 years old.
I was working, plus going to school, and I'd always give my mother money to put in the bank for me. Well, that stopped, and she kept pushing me. "Why aren't you giving me money anymore?" Finally, I had to form a partnership with my brother. Held off a little while longer, but we finally told them the truth in the end, and they embraced it. My mother, first thing she did is subscribe to every horse magazine in the country. So.
Nichols duly focused on equine reproduction at college, only for Vietnam to thwart his veterinary ambitions. Albeit, fortunately, the war ended 2 weeks before he was due to ship out. Nor was his first job in livestock terribly auspicious, a Kansas veterinarian having engaged him on a pork farm.
He had a hog farm, and he had dreams of building a big hog production unit. So he kind of talked me into doing that, and I was working on the hog farm, and the old guy that was running for him realized that if that ever did come to happen, he'd be out of a job. So he fired me.
In Nichols' own words, that meant he had to settle for the horse business, initially with Arabian and show horses back in Texas.
I wanted to really get into racing. To me, you know, show horses are great. I don't have anything, but somebody is determining the winner. A human being is determining the winner, where in racing, the horse determines the winner. And that's the ultimate goal.
Then he got a break from John D. Marsh in Virginia, who hired Nichols as a farm trainer and manager. That introduced him to the coalface, notably track work with John Tamaro, and the kind of grounding in the problems holding back ordinary animals that's arguably lacking in those whose education is confined to the equine elite.
John Tamaro, at the time, he was a leading trainer in North America when I was with him. But we only had one stake horse in the barn. He could tell more about a horse galloping on the racetrack than a vet could with an x-ray machine. Say, oh, that horse has got a knee, or, oh, he's got an ankle. But Mr. Marshall was a very difficult man. A little story, we had two really valuable mares. One of them foaled the night before, and the other one I thought was going to foal the next night. And it was very, very cold. And we only had one stall that had a heat lamp in it. So I sent the maintenance man down the hardware store to buy a Y socket so I could put a heat bulb in the stall the mare had already foaled. Mr. Marsh heard about it. He called me up there, cussed me from one end to the other. And the Y socket cost 39 cents. I had 40 cents in my pocket, and I threw it on his desk, and I said, I'll see you.
But doing the right thing by a horse means different things in different situations, as Nichols would discover from his next employer. He still views Dr. Robert Leonard of Glade Valley Farm as second only to Sheikh Hamdan among all the horsemen he has encountered.
He's a veterinarian. He's a very good reproductive veterinarian. But he was a horseman first. He raced very good racehorses off of very mediocre bloodlines. I'll give you a little idea what he's like. One day he was gone for the weekend, comes back about 9 o'clock, he calls me up. Come down to barn one. Okay, I'll go down here. What'd you bring this colt in for? I said, he had a big knee. I was poulticing. I said, next time you bring a colt out of that field, you'd wrap a chain around his neck and drag him out with a tractor. I mean, he raised a tough horse, but he taught me so much.
One winter, Nichols was driving home to Texas when he stopped off at Spendthrift. He only wanted to see exclusive native, but ended up being offered a job. And so began a priceless chapter in his education, learning from great horses and great horsemen. For a start, there was Steve Johnson, then managing the farm herd.
He was very meticulous in his record keeping, and I still use a lot of the things he taught me to this day. We'd kid because Steve would make a list, but he had so many lists, he'd have to have a list of his lists.
But above all, there was the boss himself. Putting all his other acumen aside, Leslie Coombs was esteemed by Nichols as a true horseman.
I remember the day I had to go in and tell him that Gold Digger had slipped. Gold Digger was the mother of Mr. Prospector, and she was carrying a full sibling to Mr. Prospector. And that was just as Mr. Prospector's really getting on. He just looked at me and said, well, you'll get her in foal for me again, won't you, boy? Well, sure try. But Very few people can take news like that.
As for the stallions, while Nashua was the paragon, the widest spectrum was the one dividing Razor Native and the notoriously low libido of Seattle Slough.
I mean, Razor Native, he'd breed anything. It didn't matter where they was. He actually bred a mare laying on the ground one night. He came in and he jumped, but he hit her low and knocked her down. But Slough, he would drive you nuts because he come in, he'd look at the birds in the breeding shed. And I took one mare up there one morning. We was there from 7 till about 11. We took a break. Come back after lunch, we was there till 4. Took a break. Come back at 7 that night, stayed around to about 10. The next morning, I checked her, and luckily enough, she hadn't ovulated. Brought her in there, and he bred her like Razor Native that morning. And he just wanted to shoot him. It's like, why didn't you do that yesterday?
Wonderfully resonant names, these. Yet the challenge Nichols accepted at Shadwell, which soon expanded to nearly 3,000 acres, brought no diminution in quality.
When the boss came and looked at this property for the first time, with these rolling hills, he questioned me. He said, Rick, I'm not sure about these hills, because his farm in England's flat. Dubai's flat. I said, well, when you run a horse at Epsom, does he run flat or up and down hills? He just kind of nodded.
Sure enough, the very first crop raised on the new farm included a Derby winner in Nashwan. He was bred from the great height of fashion who had been discarded from the royal stud. Nichols gestures to the office wall.
Let's put your fur up there. Big, long, leggy. The boss sent several trainers to see Nashwan as a baby, as a yearling. And all of them said he was leggy. The boss hadn't seen him yet. He landed and he said, tell me about this blushing groom colt. Everybody says he's leggy. I said, he's not leggy. I said, he's high off the ground. You know, leggy horse got long cannonballs. And when he was in the paddock for the guineas, I asked the boss, I said, he's got the shortest cannon bones in there. And he said, Nashwan, of course.
Nashwan was a very obliging animal. The farm's second Epsom winner, Erhab, could not have been more different. The sheikh decided his name, it means intimidating, the first time he saw him walk out of the barn, with all their champions, from Saki to Dajur to Jazzle. The sheikh took a very personal hand, and not just in mapping pedigrees, in which he is famously proficient. One time he flabbergasted his trainer and managers in the winner's enclosure at Newmarket by asking whether Tarib was entered for a classic in France the following weekend. Yes, sir, she's nominated, but it's only a week away. The boss nodding and saying with a shrug, gentlemen, next week I'm going to be in Chantilly, and so is this filly. Would you like to join us? And off he walked, and sure enough, Tarib won the French Oaks. And Nichols says it was the sheikh himself, not jockey Willie Carson, as everyone presumed, who discovered the dry strip under the trees when Bari stole a Group 1 mile at Ascot by hugging the far rail. Again, the whole team had heard the boss calmly giving the orders in the parade ring with their jaws agape. But their devotion, measurable in the number of Shadwell employees whose service extends across decades, is rooted in a broader empathy. The sheikh kept the late Dick Hearn in business when, confined as he then was to a wheelchair, even the Queen had moved on. Another of the sheikh's most cherished trainers, Kieran McLaughlin, has likewise been allowed to show that spirit and skill can endure physical challenges undimmed. One day, a reporter accosted the sheikh at Newmarket and asked him how he could persevere with Hearn when everybody else had given up on him. He replied, his body is broken, but not his mind. Nichols loved that. As for McLaughlin, he says,
I think it's phenomenal for what hand he's been dealt in life and how he gets through it, how it doesn't weight him down. I can't say enough about him and how much respect I have for him. A couple of years ago, I had a bad accident, shattered both ankles and broke both legs. And I was in a wheelchair for 8-9 months. And I would think about Karen. Of course, Karen's not in a wheelchair, but he struggles. And I kept thinking, someday I'll be okay. But Karen can't have, he doesn't have that hope. You know, he's not going to be okay. But his attitude, his mindset on how he deals with it is, you know, something you just got to admire and respect.
The Sheikh understands that the fatalism we learn from horses serves us well away from the track too.
Anytime I call the boss, tell him we lost something. No, he always says, inshallah, God's will. So he takes it very good. Because he's a horseman. He knows things happen. When I was a spendthrift, I had like 80 clients. And this was back the days before cell phones. So I get home at night, my phone would ring till midnight. And these people, they weren't horse people. They didn't know. I had one lady call me up, and for 10 minutes she ranted and raving about the fact I hadn't bred her mare yet. It was the middle of April. I said, ma'am, I always thought it'd be a good idea to let her foal before we bred her. But leaving that those 80 clients behind was such a pleasure when you're dealing with the boss.
But whatever he left behind, the things he did take with him from Spendthrift became integral to his regime at Chadwell. Above all, a principle that actually brings us full circle. Because Nichols owed that first impression on Sheikh Hamdan to a lesson drummed into him by Leslie Coombs.
He would tell us, you know, if somebody new in the business comes up and there's something wrong with that horse, you advise them. Because we need new people in the business. We don't want to hurt them. One night we were selling at Keeneland, November, and a mare we just put through the ring had ruptured uterine artery. Her gums was white as my shirt, and she just laid down and died. I took her halter off, and I was walking around the shed row, and here comes this young girl. Oh, I couldn't see my mare. I said, what was your mare's name? She told me. I handed her halter. I said, I'm sorry, she just blew uterine artery. And she said, oh, my God, my husband's going to kill me. He forbid me to come out here and buy a horse, and I did it anyway. So I called the owner. Nope, deal's a deal. Hammer fell. It's her horse. So I go up to the ring to find Mr. Combs. I explained to him what happened. I said, can you call the owner and see if you can persuade him to let this go by? He said, no, it won't do any good. He's a jerk. tell that girl come out in the morning, 10 o'clock, and y'all come and see me. So we go in his office, and he's very apologetic. He said, you paid $10,000 for the mare, right? And she said, yes. He said, go out and see that lady out there. Her name was, we call her Miss Judy. She did all the stallion stuff. She will give you 2 seasons in West Coast Scout. He stands for $6,000, and she will sell them for you and give you the money. So she made $2,000 out of the deal. That's the kind of man he was.
Coombs was a famously colorful character. Sheikh Hamdan's understated exterior, even after all these years, remains rather inscrutable to most of us. As such, Nichols has a privileged insight into a patron who has long assured the breed a historic legacy.
He's an incredible man. He's done so much for me and people of Shadwell, but personally, on a personal basis, you know, I lost my father when I was 18. And he was my best friend. And when I turned 35 and started working for Sheikh Hamdan, I wish people could get to know him the way I know him. To me, he's always been sometimes a father figure, sometimes like a big brother, sometimes like a friend. He's always the boss. But he'll sit around here and we'll talk just like you and I are talking. In a lot of ways, he's like my father. I think outside of my father, he's the best friend I've ever had. My father used to take me hunting. Sheikh Amdon takes me hunting. I've been afforded to do things that kings and queens can't do. He's very relaxed. It's not ever any pressure. And he knows that as long as he takes care of his people will take care of his horses.
And that's just what Nichols has been doing for half his life.
If I can last another 10 and a half months, I will be 70 years old, and I've worked for the boss 35 years. I didn't think anybody ever employed me that long. After getting fired from the hog farm, you know.